April 26th, 2024. This one is called Caffeine Free Me. Greetings, everyone. Happy Friday. So for today's little tidbit, I want to talk about caffeine. And on the last little tidbit, I was talking about spiritual detox and things that we can do, diet, lifestyle things to raise our spiritual quotient. So I have decided to go forth with caffeine-free me, and that means this is day one of not utilizing caffeine. So I figured I'd do a little show on it. Maybe if you, the listener, wants to also join along in this, maybe you're not ready quite yet, and maybe you'll come back to this at a later point. Maybe you've already given it up and you need reassurance as to why it was the right thing. Maybe you have no intention of doing it, but still, good information to know. And I'm going to focus mostly today on tea, coffee, and chocolate, because those are the main ones. Of course, there's other things like guayusa, which is native to South America, yerba mate, also native to South America, very big in Brazil, and something called yacon. No, is it yapon? I always get those. It's yapon. Yacon is a sweetener. This is actually an indigenous plant that has caffeine that's indigenous to North America, United States, I believe. But since most people are probably using one or a combination of tea, coffee, and chocolate, we will stick to that for today. So to start off, I want to talk about copper because there is an interesting connection with caffeine, especially caffeine issues or intolerance and copper. And typically when you go on Google and you say, is there any such thing as a caffeine allergy, they tell you it's super rare. But having high copper and feeling more symptomatic when you take in caffeine is not really the same as having an allergy, at least according to what it says on Google. But it's a common issue, especially a common issue with women. If this is something that's new to you, go back and listen to the Ancestral Con Part 2, Copper Mania. A lot of good information on that broadcast regarding copper. So there are about 12, well, there's probably more than 12, but I had this little copper questionnaire. And if you're dealing with any of these things, you may be swayed after hearing the information on today's show to possibly take the plunge and go caffeine-free. Maybe you just want to give up one at a time. Maybe you're utilizing tea, coffee, and chocolate. Maybe one of them has a particular proclivity or stronghold on you. I will start out by saying that when it comes to the copper content of food, chocolate happens to be incredibly high in copper. I believe it's up there with things like organ meat, liver, and kidneys. And notice how so many of the diets these days, whether it's ancestral, pro-metabolic, nose-to-tail carnivory, some type of plant-based diet, even the raw ones, the fruivorous ones, because I think cacao is technically a fruit. Any type of diet that's trendy these days, you know, ketotic diets, they're all promoting the utilization of chocolate very high in copper. The darker it is, the higher it is in copper. Tea is naturally high in copper, with, I believe, green or black being the highest. White tea is the lowest. And then coffee is not necessarily inherently high in copper the same way. And we'll talk about that a little bit more when I mention the facts part of this broadcast. But coffee will actually deplete zinc. So anything that depletes zinc, of course, we know how copper and zinc work together. Anything that depletes zinc is going to raise copper. So that's to start off with the profiles of those three things. And now 12 questions to ask yourself whether or not you have copper overload. And if you have three or five of these, you probably have some degree. 6 to 8, very likely, and 9 to 12, definitely, certainly a long-standing case of copper overload. So number one is, do you eat frequent light meals but still lack energy? Number two, does your mind tend to race even when your body is exhausted? Do you consider yourself a highly creative human, but one who is frequently anxious and drained of energy? Do you tend to daydream and live in your head? Do you frequently experience insomnia because your mind simply will not calm down? Are you prone to emotional and physical highs and lows? Do you have frequent colds and flus, slow wound healing, lack of taste or appetite, and white spots on your fingernails? Do you suffer from any of the following conditions? Migraine headaches, hyperactivity, panic attacks, mood swings, depression, premenstrual tension, skin problems for which no underlying cause has been identified? Do you have high estrogen levels or utilize the birth control pill, estrogen replacement therapy, commonly known as HRT, or a copper IUD, an intrauterine device? Do you either crave or adversely react to high copper foods such as chocolate, nuts, avocado, and soy? Does your hair have a natural orange tint or copper-colored highlights? And finally, do you have dark areas of pigmentation or skin blotches on your face? So those are questions to ask yourself. And I should also add that you could be caffeine-free and still be experiencing many of these symptoms because you could be taking in other foods that are high in copper, totally unbeknownst to you, like many of us probably are doing or have done in the past, as we've done with vitamin A and lots of other things. Or you may also be taking in foods that may not necessarily be high in copper, but maybe depleting zinc and, you know, blocking liver detox. There's so much to it. On a side note, talking about liver detox, I was just finding information the other day that depending on how we sleep, if we're cranking our heads up on a big, fat, lofty pillow, which seems to be a symbol in many developed countries, is like, you know, you have money, it's luxurious, you can afford to have this big poofy pillow to crank your head up to go to sleep. That could put your spine in such a way that it obstructs your nasal passages whilst you're sleeping and puts pressure on your spine so your liver cannot detox. So there's so much out there, and someone could be doing all the things, seeing, you know, physical therapists, going to yoga, chiropractics, all the supplements, all the herbals, all the diet, the nutrition, the circadian rhythm, the sleep schedule, you know, the sex, everything, the self-care, and they could still be feeling like hot garbage because maybe their pillow's too thick. So think about that. Just a little side note with the pillow. Maybe I'll talk about that more if I do a show on longevity, or longevity as some of us call it, talking about, you know, living to 120, 150. But just to get us started for today, to whet our appetites, some copper overload questions. So now let's get into the meat of this broadcast and let's talk about some of the benefits. This may sway you to want to quit, and also how it impairs us. So let's start out on a positive note and let's talk about the benefits. Then we'll talk about the facts of why caffeine is deleterious, especially more deleterious to some humans and others. And then we'll round it out with a quitting timeline, what to expect. So what are some of the benefits? This one is specific to quitting coffee. Coffee and tea are a little different. They are two plants that have caffeine in them, just like coffee does, but they all affect us in a different way. So for now, let's just talk about the benefits of quitting coffee. And this is probably true for tea too, just in some ways. Some of these are particular to coffee. So better sleep. That would be true in general for quitting any caffeine. Coffee tends to be the highest. Like, for example, an 8-ounce cup. And who drinks an 8-ounce cup of coffee? I mean, if you go to Starbucks, sometimes a serving is like a quart. That's 4 cups of coffee. That's 400 milligrams. So a cup of coffee, 100 milligrams. A cup of tea, 30 to 50, depending on how strong it's brewed. So better sleep, healthier and whiter teeth. That would be true for coffee and tea. Clearer skin, true for both, but more true for coffee. Lower blood pressure, true for both, but more coffee. Less anxiety and stress, true for both, but more for coffee. Improved digestion, more true for coffee because there's a relation between coffee and things like, what's that stomach thing called? Not just gastritis, that's it. And also sometimes people will get like acid reflux and all different types of stuff. And this is not an issue with coffee, with the caffeine. This is intrinsic to the coffee plant. So you can say, oh, I'm going to switch to detox. Sometimes people switch to a low acid. They switch to a cold brew, which tends to be lower in acid. But over time, you pay the price for loading your body up with an acidic substance. Other benefit of quitting is more efficient absorption of iron, calcium, and B vitamins. I think that's more true for coffee than tea. This is true for both. Helps to balance hormones. So I know there's been a lot of foolery and disinfo and misinfo out there that caffeine can help balance our hormones. I can't see how a adrenal stimulant could balance our hormones, no matter what stage of life we are in. And when we think about the, quote, first drug of life, typically we think of sugar, right? That's the first thing. Now we have this abominable trend. I don't know if this is happening anywhere else in the world, but here in the States, we have this really, really ghastly trend. When a child turns one, the parents will procure or make something called a smash cake. It's a small little cake that the child gets for themselves, and then typically there's another larger cake that's similar or the same for the rest of the guests at the soiree to consume. But the youngster gets this cake. Typically it's got all types of, you know, dyes in it. Of course it's got sugar and white flour, probably low-quality lipids, preserves, you know, the whole thing. And the child is given this cake, and they're told to put their face in it, to squeeze it with their hands, smush it all up, rub it all over themselves. And this habituates children to a drug, the first drug of people's lives, typically is sugar. It was not for me, which is a rarity, because I know for a lot of people, that's a real tough one to quit because it goes back so deep. There's so much emotion attached to it as well. Memories, things like that. Then also the youngster's covered with the food coloring. It also makes a mockery of food and tells us that it's okay to waste food, which it's not okay to waste food. I mean, technically something like that isn't even food, you know, if we're going to be technical about things. But it really is a very, very poor example. And typically all of this is captured on video and then uploaded on antisocial media. So our first hormonal assault of life is sugar. But the age that youngsters are utilizing caffeine, the habit starts younger and younger all the time. Like for me, I drank this tea as a child called Kukicha tea, twig tea, bancha tea. It goes by a couple of names. Cha means tea in Japanese. And my mom didn't know that this tea had like 10% caffeine. So it was 90% less caffeine than, let's say, a cup of coffee, but it still had a little bit of caffeine. It was made from the stems, so it's more alkaline than the leaves. And I was given this tea as a youngster in my, like, my sippy cup or my thermos. So I got habituated to caffeine fairly young in life. Sugar, no. I was always told that sugar would make me go to hell or be ugly, could care less about going to hell. Because, you know, hell could be here on earth right now. Many of us are in hell currently, right? Or in heaven or in somewhere where in between, but definitely didn't want to be ugly. So I never ate that stuff. A short time in my life when I flirted with the repeat pro-metabolic thing, I did consume it, but there are no benefits. It only brings you lower. It brings you temporarily higher because of the dopamine, but it makes you bottom out and it brings you lower. And then the lower you feel, the more you want to be boosted back up, right? So if we have natural dopamine hits in our lives, like being outside, lovemaking, self-pleasure, meditation, pranayama, yoga, you know, fitness, connecting with humans, eating well, you know, a work that makes us feel satisfied, you know, bonding with loved ones, pets, etc., we're less likely to indulge in these habits. And finally, a benefit of quitting coffee as well as tea is assists in improving metabolism. There's been a lot of information that it boosts our metabolism. I can't say that that is really accurate because all it's really going to do is put us in a state of fight or flight. And some people are going to be more sensitive to this based on many things. Like typically vegetarians don't tolerate caffeine or people who eat low protein, as well as people who balance out that stimulatory effect with like the grounding aspect of animal foods. People who starve themselves don't do well on caffeine, whether you're eating meat or not. people with, you know, certain just constitutions, anyone who's got a case of copper overload. There are many, many reasons. So those are some ideas to whet your appetite. And here are some more. This is kind of on the vein of like, you know, the negative or the bad. So why would we want to quit caffeine? It gives us low energy and fatigue. And you might say to yourself, well, wait a minute, I'm using caffeine for energy. No, you're not. You're whipping your adrenals and they're being perked up by a stimulant. That is not energy. That is actually tension. There's a huge difference because when you give up the caffeine, you go through this phase where you get really sluggish and really tired and fatigued as your adrenals are rebuilding. And you can rebuild them in like 90 days. It's not a long process. That may seem long, maybe for some of us who are a little bit younger, it may sound daunting, but the time will go by anyway. Another reason to quit, anxiety, depression. Who wants anxiety and depression? Those are actually adrenal issues, anxiety and depression. They're also tied to copper toxicity. Panic attacks, we know that's tied to copper toxicity. Migraine headaches, heart palpitations, high blood pressure, poor concentration, poor skin quality, yellow teeth, lumps in the breast or fibrocystic breast disease, and decreased fertility. So it would make sense that there is a cafe on every corner, you know, here in the developed world and in North America, you know, in the United States. If you're in Manhattan, there is a cafe on every corner. Here on Long Island, they are all over the place. Do you think that these businesses would be allowed to proliferate so much if this was a health supportive substance? No. Like when you walk in Manhattan, you see a pizzeria, like on every block, you see a bar, you see, a cafe, you see a marijuana dispensary. I mean, in a way, utilizations of caffeine actually put the nervous system and the adrenals into more of a stress than things like alcohol. And something else I'm going to mention here too, from an ancestral perspective, for those of us, probably the majority of us listening, who have European ancestry, chocolate is not a European food. Tea is not a European food, and coffee is not a European food. Before those foods entered Europe and then course made their way to, like, you know, the Americas and things like that, beer and cider were our wine were our main beverages. So these are all foods of tropical origins, especially coffee and chocolate. So a little bit there about quitting, the benefits of quitting. And this is very interesting too. Here are 8 ways that caffeine impairs the brain. Tends to produce dependence. Well, anything that's addicting will produce dependence. That's just a given, right? Can cause drug withdrawal reactions. That is true too. So if it was completely and totally harmless, people wouldn't feel like a truck hit them when they were trying to withdraw. And of course, the more you use, just like anything else, whether it's booze, tobacco, marijuana, sugar, whatever it is, the stronger and larger your habit, the bigger the detox is going to take. That's pretty obvious. It can cause or worsen psychiatric illnesses. There's been cases of people who use so much caffeine, they were actually like pretty much in a state of schizophrenia, pretty intense. It can impair physical and mental performance. Maybe some of you are familiar with that research where they drugged a spider on LSD, cocaine, marijuana, and caffeine. And the weirdest, like, most low energy web of all of those was actually the caffeine one. Interferes with sleep. That's an obvious. We know that. May influence the risk of other illnesses that in turn exert frontal lobe effects through physical or mental stress. Yep. And isn't it crazy that someone could be going to, like, let's say, a therapist for some type of like trauma, some mental illness, seeing a psychiatrist, you know, actually going the route of, you know, getting Dr. Z to write a prescription or doing something, and being in this quote therapeutic relationship for sometimes decades of someone's life, and the therapist or the doctor never asking the person, what's your caffeine use like? I mean, wow, right? I mean, a lot of the people who I know in my life personally who are heavy users, like, have psychiatric issues. So it definitely goes hand in hand. Now, is that just true that everyone is? No, because oftentimes the people I know who tend to be very heavy caffeine users are very heavy sugar users, and the rest of their diet is like, it's pretty non-nutritious. It's very unfortunate. But, you know, this is like probably the majority of the information I put out, maybe not something for everybody. I mean, which is maybe unfortunate to say, and I'm not trying to be negative in any regard, but I would hope that everyone could live their life off of these things, right? I mean, there has been stuff that I've read, and I've experienced this with the last time that I stopped utilizing, where you almost get into this really groovy, like philosophical, psychedelic flow state. And that's our natural state. Our natural state is not jacking ourselves up with stimulants. It's not. It never was supposed to be like this. Now, if humans always had proclivity, and animals as well, like animals like dolphins and such, to altered states of consciousness, of course. And I'm not trying to debate that and say that's wrong or sinful or anything like that, because I do not believe that. But when we use something on a regular basis every day to take off the quote edge, this is the problem. And there's a quote that I actually read this morning when I was having my breakfast. Let me share it here with everyone, because it basically flows in nicely to what I'm saying, you know, talking about the spiritual experience, talking about the sacred, talking about how traditional societies, and of course, this is making a renaissance today. We love these experiences, these profound altered states of consciousness, and I'm all for that. But here's the problem when people get habituated to these like low level drugs. And I know some people just saying, oh gosh, she's calling caffeine a drug? Like, that's harsh. It's not heroin. It's not meth. Well, it alters how we feel. Anything that alters how we feel is a drug. So here's the quote. Many modern societies have lost a sense of the sacred, that's capital S, and learned to abuse altered states and the practices once revered. Recreational drugs like alcohol, coffee, and marijuana are all commonly used to medicate unsatisfying lives, or simply to enrich a moment. Let's read that again. Recreational drugs like alcohol, coffee, and marijuana are all commonly used to medicate unsatisfying lives, or simply to enrich a moment. As a result, they become mundane subjects and continue to provide ways to escape life rather than embrace it. Intense, but definitely something to think about. And finally, two additional ways how caffeine can impair the brain may exert effects that impact on spiritual and social dimensions of our character. Well, I think what I just said kind of sums that up. And in very large doses can cause toxicity and even death. I know a lot of the carnivorous people like to talk about how caffeine is a plant pesticide, and that's their reasoning for it. You know, they get caught up in all like the idea of like anti-nutrients and pesticides. And I love a lot of the information about the cleanliness of those regimes, about, you know, avoiding a lot of the foods that do contain toxins. But a lot of them don't understand that a lot of the animal foods also contain toxins. And if it was only so easy to eat from one kingdom, we'd all be doing okay, right? But they're correct when they say it is a plant pesticide, because it is a plant pesticide. That's why the plants that produce it typically don't get eaten by animals, because the animals don't like that that bitter, you know, taste of the caffeine pesticide. So those were some things about how caffeine impairs the brain. We talked about the benefits of quitting, all good stuff. Now let's talk about some other facts. Well, there's a correlation between diabetes and caffeine. And for those who already have diabetes, which is not a good state to be in, that can cause even more blood sugar fluctuations. And there's probably a copper toxicity issue, I would presume, with diabetes, because it affects the organs, it affects the blood, it affects the blood sugar. That's something else that caffeine will do, sugar will do, all stimulants will do. And when you already have copper toxicity, you're going to have issues with blood sugar, issues with insulin. As people get older, they have more blood sugar issues, they have more insulin issues, their level of copper goes up in their body, their level of vitamin A goes up. So something to consider. And, you know, a lot of diabetics are told, oh yeah, don't have any sugar, but have all the caffeine you want. And of course, that's really terrible advice. Now, here's a little bit of information about coffee and the correlation to copper and tea. This comes from the work of Dr. Paul Eck, who was one of the forerunners in the mineral balancing modality. So here's what it says. One beverage that must be avoided by vegetarians is coffee. To begin with, there are substantial amounts of copper in coffee. Like, okay, now some people will say that coffee will actually chelate copper. Some will say doing coffee enemas will actually chelate copper. But if that is true, and it chelates the copper out of you, that still means it's going somewhere else in the body and you can get copper dumping symptoms, right? Which we really want to avoid that. So some people out there are taking like tremendous doses of zinc, which could also cause copper dumping. A small dose typically won't do that. It really depends on the person though, of course. And then doing really heroic methodologies like coffee enemas. Now, can they be helpful and feel good, especially if you're really plugged up with constipation? They can, but they really don't get to the root. There are things that are far better than coffee enemas. In addition to this, coffee depletes the vegetarian of zinc, a mineral in which he is already terribly low. And this is not just true of vegetarians. I think there's a zinc deficiency epidemic. It's been said that our ancestors got about 45 milligrams of zinc. I don't think the majority of people, maybe carnivores, are getting that amount. I mean muscle meat carnivores, not the nose to tail people who usually after a year or two they hit the wall hard because of all the copper and the vitamin A, and it's a pretty bad situation. So yeah, we can assume that majority of vegetarians are probably going to be terribly low in zinc, but majority of people are. Coffee can cause a major increase in anxiety and depression because it releases so much stored copper. So if you tell yourself you get like really bad symptoms of anxiety and depression, which of course, like I said earlier in this little tidbit, that's adrenal issues. We know that people who have copper toxicity have adrenal issues because of the high copper, because of the blood sugar issues. So coffee and tea are not your friend, regardless, but especially if you have an issue with, you know, heavy metals and copper overload. And also remember that when someone has a copper toxicity issue, it's not just one thing. It's like a lot of people who don't understand the low toxin lifestyle or toxic bile theory. They think that the entire thing is about honing in and having a hard on for vitamin A. It's not. That's a really uneducated opinion. It's about minimizing all different types of toxicities. And people who aren't aware just think it's honing in and having tunnel vision for one thing. Many vegetarians intuitively realize this, how coffee will release so much stored copper. So they drink tea instead, but that's not necessarily the best thing too, because tea also has copper, but it also contains manganese, which will counteract the copper present in tea. But then manganese has been said to contribute to cholestasis, which is a sludgy flow of bile. So I don't think we really want that. It is better if vegetarians forego tea, but it is one beverage that they are at least the least likely to give up. For them, tea is much easier to handle as a major alternative to coffee. Well, a lot of people who are vegetarians, not all, their energy levels are bad. That's why they're drinking coffee and tea. And if you're drinking coffee and tea or using chocolate to boost your energy levels, that means you're getting that excitatory aspect from the copper, that like spark feeling, right? That's why a lot of people, when they start using liver, they're like, oh, I just felt so energized. Yeah, that's the electrical ability of copper. That's that feeling. If you need a stimulant to feel energized, there is an organ issue. There's not a deficiency of caffeine in the body. There's an issue with the organs, and there's typically a deficiency in protein. There's a deficiency in fiber. So a little bit there about copper and coffee. We talked about diabetes and caffeine. And now let's round it all out and talk about the timeline. What can we expect? Let's first talk about a summary, different approaches, and then let's talk about a quitting timeline. Okay, so there's two ways to quit everything: cold turkey or tapering off. I'm more of a fan of the cold turkey. I think when you do the tapering off thing, it works maybe for some people, depending on their personality, their dosage, whatever. But the tapering off game could, you know, last months, years, decades. So the cold turkey, sometimes get it done with, rip the Band-Aid off, go on to the withdrawal and live your life. But if someone's dealing with a tremendous dose of something, maybe tapering off is better. Like I know in the case of, let's say, alcohol or benzos, you know, the pharmaceutical drug, those really have to be tapered down, otherwise it could cause death. But we're not talking about that. We're talking about caffeine. So choose your way, cold turkey or tapering off. I'm more of a fan of just the cold turkey way. Take 2 to 3 days off for acute withdrawal symptoms. Supposedly days 2 to 5 are the worst. And that could also be true of things like the marijuana withdrawal as well. Plan on 2 unproductive weeks. Of course, this depends like how badly someone was habituated to it. I mean, I think some people are taking in like 3 to 4 cups of coffee per day. That's way different than someone just taking in like 1 cup of green tea, which is pretty much where I was at. Focus your time on diet, exercise, and sleep. If you have ability to sauna, I found that really important. Also getting your circadian rhythms set too. You know, getting sun first thing in the morning, you know, getting sun breaks throughout the day, doing that every time you feel you need to, like, quote, a pick-me-up. And if you're doing the caffeine, you really owe it to yourself to also do the sugar, because those two habituations go hand in hand. They're both things that people use to get energy, but the problem is that these things actually bring you lower, so you're going to be constantly chasing the dragon for energy if those are staples in your diet. Total recovery of energy is an average 2 to 3 months. This can be longer if you are a really heavy consumer. The benefits of being caffeine-free are 100% worth it. And now here is a little bit of the quitting headline, timeline, starting from 1 week going all the way to the 6 month time. So 1 week, headache, acute withdrawal, that type of stuff. Second week, tired, less anxiety. 1 month, still tired, but better sleep. The second month, better energy. The third month, close to your pre-caffeinated self. And from month 4 to 6, small, steady gains. And if you were taking in like an exorbitant amount, like 1,000+ milligrams, it may actually take you longer because you've been in such a state of whipping your adrenals for all that time. It's obviously going to take a lot longer. I know last time that I dehabituated, everything started to come back really quickly for me. But it was pretty much, like I said, green tea. And I also have a lot of like tools in my, my arsenal. I have the sauna, diet, exercise, sleep, just knowing exactly what to eat, like, you know, getting your dopamine being raised from, you know, taking walks and lifting weights and doing yoga and pranayama and going outside and eating like, you know, a diet that's, you know, really nutrient dense. I mean, I really think that if you want to be successful at this, you want to find ways to raise your dopamine. And that can be done. I'll just share this one last thing about dopamine. Let me just find it in my phone. That's really what it's about, because you're getting this dopamine raise from the caffeine, from the sugar, from a lot of things. So eat protein, eat ample protein. Make sure you're using the toilet on a regular basis. So get lots of, you know, fiber and protein. Consume, you know, the fats that work for you. Do exercise, get enough sleep, and meditate. Those are the things that can really guarantee that you will stick with it. And with protein, I've said this before, but I'll say it again. I'd say about 30 for each meal. If that sounds incredibly daunting and you're like, I just can't eat that much, start with 20 and work up with from there. And by protein, I'll just reiterate this, eggs, land meat, fowl, you know, chicken and turkey, you know, red meat, beef, venison, elk, things like that. Those are like the staples. I guess if you wanted to do this stuff on the side, like, you know, lamb is a tiny bit high in copper, pork isn't the cleanest, duck's a bit high in copper. So if you're really doing the copper toxicity game as well, it would be the eggs, the fowl, and the red meat for the most part. And with fish, you'd want to focus on the fillet fish. not the shellfish. Shellfish is very high in copper. And I think that with what's happened to the oceans, less fish in general makes good sense. But that would be a good starting point in regards to being successful, because, you know, sometimes someone might get, you know, pretty gung-ho at something and say, I'm going to do this. I feel so jazzed up after like listening to a show like this or another one, and then find themselves feeling like they're fading and they can't do it. So you always want to be armed with the right tools. Like, that's how I was successful with my ganja mitigation. I was armed with the right tools. And also, a lot of it is, it's totally mindset. I know a lot of people think that like maybe that's bullshit, but a lot of it is mindset. When you want to do something, you do it, right? Otherwise, we end up in this state, like I had posted this yesterday on Telegram, pain plus learned relief equals addiction. And I don't think anyone really wants to be in that state. That's the state we end up in because of the choices we've made, but that is not our optimal state, nor is it our birthright. So that is all for today on this little show, Caffeine Free Me. I hope that was easy listening, perhaps a little bit inspiring for you, and have a beautiful weekend. We shall connect again. Sat Nam.